9:30 and 57, 58 seconds here in Portland. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I've come to bring you the news you're not supposed to know on Press Watch, a regular weekly feature. And I'm thinking about changing the name to the Anti-Fascist Show or something. Every now and then I think about that sort of thing. Like all KBOO volunteer programmers, I do this for the love of it and for whatever reasons. And I have a day job, which sustains me. And my day job is driving the bus. And I do think about my program as I drive the bus. I try not to think about it too much because it's a safety-related job. But I see a lot of things, and I hear a lot of comments. And one of the things that pops up a lot lately is people fear that the fares will increase. And I sympathize with these fears, and I want to explain why. Since Reagan, but, you know, since the Bush company took over, people are getting more and more squeezed. There's less benefits coming in various forms. You know, when you cut someone's food benefits, they've got to make it up with, they've got to make up the difference somewhere else. And when you exclude people and when you add fees to health care, you drop people off the rolls. And that's the intention, actually. There are people who can't get it together, can't get enough cash together, can't hobble out into the streets long enough to beg for a $15 fee to keep their health insurance, their state-supported health insurance. And so these little increases make a difference. And TriMet is planning on increasing fares, has increased fares. If you get on a bus and you need to go across town, it'll cost you $1.80. Now, if you got a job, so what? That's a bargain. What a deal. The thing is, though, that TriMet actually has a tax base. And the tax base, well, it's about to go up. It's going to charge $6, excuse me. It's going to charge the employers that, oh dear, I'm Flemish now. Must have come from Europe. The tax is about to go up to $6 and I believe 41 cents, maybe 42, per $1,000 that is paid for an employee for these corporations in the area that depend on TriMet's service to get their employees to work. Now, that is very low tax, considering the service that is supplied. And the fuel squeeze has been on. So the way TriMet has been reacting to this is to speed up the drivers. And there's been various ways of doing this. You may, if you guess that I'm bringing this up because of the recently concluded transit strike in New York, you'd be right. There are various ways of doing this. One of them is just to schedule the run so that you can't possibly recover at the end of it. When bus drivers do a run, it's an intense period of activity. You're driving a 40-foot-long, 13-ton, 10-foot-wide, 10-foot-high vehicle. You have to dodge everyone while serving the customers and stopping at the right stops and trying not to get too far behind and making sure you don't get ahead of schedule if you empty out. And it's stressful. And the way that this has been dealt with over the years is that when you get to the end of, after you've been driving for a couple hours, you get to a place where you can rest for a few minutes. And the reason the rest is there is because often traffic will delay the bus. It's not a helicopter. It's not always going to be on time. And you can catch up the time there if, and the idea was if every now and then you run way behind, well, you can still get back on schedule. But the other reason the rest is there, excuse me, is so the bus driver can collect her wits and use the restroom, and maybe get lunch or breakfast, whatever. This is all being squeezed, and the people who are doing it congratulate themselves that they are just geniuses because of this conservative mindset that has been in place for a quarter century now. Wherever there is a budget squeeze, and there's always a budget squeeze because of resistance to taxing the very rich, then the thing to do is to squeeze the employees. Well, the employees' lives are getting cheaper, more stressful, And it does have an effect. Drivers are getting sick. Drivers are losing their jobs for various reasons. Occasionally a driver turns to drugs, loses their job, because they're trying to stay awake, basically. And some drivers have died. And this situation is becoming intolerable. And I wonder if we're looking towards the day when we'll have a transit strike here in Portland, and I wonder how Portlanders will deal with it. My criticism, I can't be sharp enough in criticizing the TriMet attitude towards taxing the employer class. They need the bus. They should pay for the bus, period. A simple increase to $10 per 1,000 would eliminate the budget problems at TriMet and allow the fare to be reduced, which desperately needs to be happened because, as I mentioned, the conservo-fascists have been grinding the poor down further and further and further. You know, this week, one of the buses that was ahead of me in line when I was driving the number 4 was missing. It may be that it had needed to be repaired, or it may be that the driver got sick. I don't know. But I was picking up a double load and getting slower and slower, and it was getting stressful. And that's okay. I'm a bus driver. I can handle that. But, you know, people standing outside in the cold and the rain, sometimes they can't handle it. Sometimes they get very angry. And a man spat in my eye this week. And I've talked to other bus drivers, and I've heard of this sort of thing happening more and more. And sometimes people scream that they cannot afford the extra 30 cents. And it's true. They don't have it. They have to go beg for it. The stress is on, and it's the workers that are being punished. And that's how TriMet operates, and I think it's inhuman, and I want you to know about it. Ave Solis Invictus, the sun returns. This is the solstice, a very cheery time of year for me because I love the sun. I don't know how other people feel about it. I think I'm a little different. You know, when I see the sun, I feel this great joy in my heart, and I learn to do a gesture in which I reach out to the sun and I make a gesture as if I were pulling the sun into my heart, and I feel this great love. I feel like the sun is a being and I'm in contact with it. You know, I'm not getting messages from the sun or anything like that. I just mean, oh, you know how you look at a cute dog and the dog looks back at you and you kind of feel your heart open up because it's a sweet dog? Well, I don't want to compare the sun to a dog, but my heart opens up to the sun, and I love the sun, and I can feel it after, you know, when in the northern hemisphere, when the earth swings over and the longest night occurs, then it starts swinging back the other way. But there's this tremendous, well, planetary momentum. There's a wobble, and it takes a few days for it to become obvious to the consciousness that the days are getting longer. And that usually happens around the 24th or the 25th for me, and it brings great joy to my heart. And it doesn't matter whether it's Saturnalia or whatever celebration. I think I'm late, but Eid Mubarak, if that's yours. It doesn't matter which celebration it is. It really feels good here in the Northern Hemisphere. So Ave Solis Invictus means hail the unconquered sun. And I've mentioned that before as it became part of other religions. And now to comments about the news. Despite the remarkable setbacks against the insectoid infestation in the executive branch, the fact remains that a quarter century after Reagan took the Oval Office with illegal funds from his death squad Salvadoran friends, the United States has gone fascist. I don't say that lightly. I'm being very specific. Look at the local chain daily and see the letters supporting President Bush's illegal plan to spy on anywhere, anyone, anytime. These are the same people who would have automatically condemned the East German Stasi secret police for doing the same thing. But now they're chock full of the same fascist arguments supporting our secret police. I read one letter to the newspaper that said, if you're doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. Can you believe anyone actually repeats that canard? Tell that to the Quakers, fascists. I hear people talking as I drive my city bus, the victim class, the people who are struggling to pay rising bills with the insulting cruelty of a minimum wage, part-time, no benefits check, are the ones who have been most propagandized. They're the big believers. When they see someone in utter despair staggering down to the vortex at Northwest 5th and Burnside in downtown Portland, they'll say, oh, well, she's made bad choices. It's a really callous thing to say, but they're used to saying it, and they don't know that it's calloused. They feel good about it. There is no speculation as to whether she might have been raped or lost her baby or suffered from MS or all three, just condemnation and a fear that tax dollars will be wasted on her. This is fascism. This is the antithesis of humanity. These considerations and speculations, these thoughts of human solidarity, have been removed from the popular parlance and replaced with a sort of sneering insult that Reagan's people popularized with the term welfare Cadillac. I'm sure there are plenty of welfare Ferraris and Rolls Royces and Gulfstream 5 jets with marble and gold appointed onboard showers, but the welfare was corporate giveaway welfare. The sort that is given to General Electric and Halliburton execs, even after years of convictions for corruption and fraud, the repeat offender Ferraris. The collective mind has been poisoned with fascism, and even if the Bushites are removed in a clean sweep, even if the voter fraud machines are removed, and international observers certify a clean election next year, there will still be a seething pool of stupidity, ignorance, and misplaced resentment in the working class. And having said that, I would like to say that it's arbitrary that this stupidity, ignorance, and misplaced resentment is there. I've been to Cuba, and I've encountered a population that was actually educated, actually had access to logic, to uncensored news. Yeah, uncensored. How do you like that? It's supposed to be a dictatorship, and they're supposed to be getting propaganda. Well, that's a lie. I was there. I saw what they can get broadcast. They do get broadcast from all over the world. They don't watch Fox unless they want to laugh. The Cuban people speak different languages. They understand geography. They understand geology. They know about global warming. They are so much more educated than the American public. There are doctors everywhere. You don't have to look for a doctor. If you cough in Cuba, a doctor will come to you. Here, we have allowed the fascists, we have allowed the Reaganites, we have allowed the Republicans and the conservatives to make us stupid, and we are suffering thereby. We don't speak other languages. We don't know what makes an airplane fly in the sky. We don't know who's the president of Canada. We don't know anything, and we believe the lies that we're told. This is something that desperately needs to be addressed, and the point I was making there is that we're not inherently stupid. We've been made stupid. I include myself. There's huge gaps in my education. I'd like to fill in a few of them. I'll feel better when I do. You know, it's a joy. It's empowering. It's worth doing. But we have an anti-intellectual, frankly, fascist attitude in this country, and I hear it on that bus. This is something that desperately needs to be addressed, and though I'm proud to have had the opportunity to chip away at the phenomenon on the air, it needs to be more generally confronted. No matter how they scream politically correct, the Republicans and the other conservatives who repeat their brainwashed mantras must be daily confronted. We must create a climate in which it is no longer legitimate to be a conformist with fascism. I almost said with corporate fascism, but that's redundant. Imagine going down the road and encountering a large poster that simply says, Bushism is fascism. How would you feel? Do you think it would take the edge off the fear that the Bushites have been generating since they arranged for 911? Time is 9:45 almost. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. From The Guardian, serious questions are being raised today about the ability to combat an anticipated bird flu pandemic following the deaths of two people who are being treated with the drug the world is stockpiling as a safeguard against the virus. To the dismay of medical experts and concern amongst those responsible for the worldwide efforts to fight a pandemic, the H5N1 bird flu virus in the bloodstream of the two patients in Vietnam rapidly developed resistance to the drug Tamiflu. One, a 13-year-old girl, appeared to be stable at first and then rapidly worsened as the virus mutated, became more aggressive, and eventually killed her. She was chock full of Tamiflu. Yeah, Dick Cheney's Tamiflu. From Indonesia, at least 13 Indonesians are suspected to be suffering from bird flu as fears of a major outbreak mounted. This is also from the BBC. Well, actually, not also. This is from the BBC as opposed to from the, what was it, Guardian? The Guardian. Tests are also being conducted on three children who died this week after they showed symptoms of the disease. Four Indonesians have been confirmed to have died from the H5N1 strain of the virus, which has already killed dozens of people across Asia. Indonesian officials urged people not to panic, saying there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission. Health officials fear that if the virus combines with human influenza virus, it would become highly infectious and lead to a global flu pandemic. According to the BBC correspondent in Jakarta, Rachel Harvey, the increase in the number of suspected cases in Indonesia could be partly due to an increase in public awareness. By the way, while I'm in the middle of all this grim news, I have some Christmas presents for you. Oh, did I say Christmas? Sure, I can say that. And I'll get to those before too long. There is now saturation coverage of the bird flu outbreak on television in Indonesia. It's on radio and in the newspapers. With increased surveillance, it is not unusual that you would pick up more cases, says Dr. Margaret Chan, the World Health Organization's representative on bird flu. Tests have yet to confirm whether two young girls aged 5 and 2 died of bird flu in Jakarta on Wednesday. A 5-year-old boy who died in Kalimantan, Borneo on Tuesday also showed symptoms of the disease. Now, here's the interesting sentence. Officials say they are still not certain how the three children could have contracted the bird flu virus. Let me just read that again. And remember, the context is, did you get it from a bird? Because if you didn't get it from a bird, there's trouble. And the sentence is, officials say they are still not certain how the three children could have contracted the bird flu virus. The first case of human infection in Indonesia was announced in July, 18 months after the government acknowledged that bird flu was present in the country's poultry flocks. Earlier this week, Health Minister Siti Fadila Supari warned that Indonesia could be facing an epidemic, remarks which were later played down by other officials. But the government is evidently worried. Health officials were to meet in Jakarta on Thursday to discuss the issue, and authorities have already instituted tough new measures, including the power to force people suspected of having bird flu into hospital. Despite the spread of the disease in Indonesia, the outbreak is still being classified at a level 3 alert. Dr. Chan said, WHO's pandemic alert has 6 phases, I'll get to that in a minute, ranging from 0 infection in birds and humans to a full-scale pandemic. The WHO has urged countries with infected poultry to use widespread mass culling, in other words, kill them all and burn them, as the best method of stopping the spread of the disease. But the Indonesian government has only carried out limited culling, preferring to vaccinate poultry because of the expense of compensating farmers. Now, the current phase of the pandemic alert, according to the World Health Organization, I'm going to pass this on. If you pull up the World Health Organization, you'll find this little chart. And like the Ashcroft bogus terrorist alerts, it goes from green to red. And in the green, there would be the interpandemic phase, which we were in for a while, the low risk of human cases. That is stage 1 of 6. Stage 2 would be where you're looking out for that new virus in animals, but there's no human cases, and there's a higher risk of human cases. That would be level 2. That level is passed. We are now in pandemic alert stage, level 3, which is described as no or very limited human-to-human transmission. And as you will recall, I just discussed possibilities of human-to-human transmission, as was implied by the sentence that I read twice. Level 4, new virus causes human cases, evidence of increased human-to-human transmission. We seem to be on the cusp of that, but the WHO is not saying it's level 4. Level 5 would be evidence of significant human-to-human transmission, and pandemic is level 6. Experts at the World Health Organization and elsewhere believe that the world is now closer to another influenza pandemic than in any time since 1968, when the last of the previous country's 3 pandemics occurred. WHO uses a series of 6 phases of pandemic alerts as a system for informing the world. Well, I just said that. Sorry about that. All right, now I'm going to change topics once again because something big just happened in Latin America, and it'll probably increases the possibility that the insectoid parasites in the executive branch, those insects, those bugs, blood-sucking types, will attack South America at some point. And this is from Prensa Latina, which is the Cuban news agency. Dateline is Quito, Ecuador. Latin American nations have hailed Monday the landslide victory in Bolivia of left-wing lawmaker Evo Morales, leader of the movement towards socialism. In the Sunday presidential elections, Ecuadorian newspapers and news websites, as well as TV and radio news shows, have highlighted the victory by the Land and Union leader, who, according to preliminary reports, got more than 50% of the votes. So that's my first Christmas present to you. Good news. Chilean mass media also headlined Morales' triumph and his first statement after his lead was made public. They also highlighted the joy of most Bolivians in the demonstration of support and sympathy the indigenous leader received when he came to his humble hometown to vote. And now let's see what the Associated Press says about it. The winner of Bolivia's presidential elections has repeated his vow to nationalize oil and gas. Isn't that American? Bolivians are happy. They've elected an indigenous leader for the first time. He has policies. He wants to make coca legal in Bolivia so the peasants can continue to chew it as they always have. And he wants to look into how much of the crop is necessary for legal medical use and how much is not, and how to work out things economically and equitably with everyone there so that there isn't any freaking drug war and smuggling and stuff like that. He's a smart guy. He's a reasonable guy. Everybody's happy. So what does the Associated Press say? Has repeated his vow to nationalize oil and gas. Oh, my God! How dare he say that the oil and gas under the soil of his own country actually belongs to that nation's people? What is he thinking? Doesn't he know it's all ours? I wish I had a little recording now, you know, on one of those 360s of Daffy Duck going, mine, mine, mine. I always thought Daffy Duck was great at that. And very American. Let's see, what else does it say? Indian coca farmer Evo Morales says he will not confiscate refineries or infrastructure owned by multinational corporations. Instead, his government will renegotiate contracts so that companies are partners, but not owners, in developing Bolivia's resources, he said. And they are probably getting the tanks together right now. 9:53, you're listening to Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Now let's get to some more Christmas presents. From rawstory.com, lobbyist nears terms on plea deal by Ann E. Kornblut. Jack Abramoff. The Republican lobbyist under indictment for fraud in South Florida is expected to complete a plea agreement in the Miami criminal case, setting the stage for him to become a crucial witness in a broad federal corruption investigation. People with direct knowledge of the case said one participant in the case said the deal could be made final as early as next week. The terms of the plea deal have not been completed, and the negotiations are especially complicated because they involve prosecutors both in Miami and in Washington, where Mr. Abramoff is being investigated in a separate influence peddling inquiry, participants said. Details of what he feels comfortable pleading guilty to are probably largely worked out, the participant said, while the details of the prison sentence are less resolved. Some of the details are still in flux, said a participant who, like others interviewed, was granted anonymity because of the sensitivity of the talks. Anything can happen, the participant said, adding that the agreement could fall apart. Another person with detailed knowledge of the case said that while negotiations were continuing, the deal could take longer than another week to be settled, but after a lengthy bargaining phase, Mr. Abramoff's lawyers and prosecutors in the Florida case appear closer to resolving several of the central issues in the plea deal, in which the defendant would receive a reduced prison sentence, most likely in the range of 5 to 7 years, though that is fluid, in exchange for pleading guilty. And here's a Christmas present. Ding, 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 agreeing to testify against his former associates, who are almost entirely Republicans, or grotesquely corrupt Democrats. I departed from the text just a tad there. Isn't that a nice Christmas present? Mr. Abramoff was indicted in Florida on August 11th in charges stemming from his purchase of a fleet of casino boats in 2000. Prosecutors said Mr. Abramoff and a business partner, Adam Kidan, falsified documents and lied about their financing in order to complete the purchase. Mr. Kidan pleaded guilty last week, leaving Mr. Abramoff to face 6 criminal counts and up to 30 years in prison. And a partridge and a fair... No, it says, as case's sole defendant. At the same time, prosecutors in Washington have been sifting through evidence of what they believe is a corruption scheme involving at least a dozen lawmakers and their former staff members, many of whom worked closely on legislation with Mr. Abramoff and accepted gifts and favors from him. Although Mr. Abramoff is also in negotiations in that case, it is unclear whether a settlement can be reached in time for both agreements to be announced at once. Wouldn't that be nice? Michael Scanlon, a close business associate of Mr. Abramoff in Washington, who also worked on the Sun Cruise casino boat deal, pleaded guilty in October to testifying in both inquiries. The case, being worked on by dozens of investigators as part of a multi-agency task force, has expanded in recent months to put senior Republican officials and prominent party lobbyists under immense scrutiny. You're welcome. Put the wrapping in the corner. I'll take care of it later. Now, here's another one from Raw Story, because, you know, this is a good gift, Miss Heck. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald is not expected to shut down his investigation into the leak of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson when he finishes his inquiry of White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove's role in the leak. Lawyers close to the probe said these sources indicated that if a grand jury returns an indictment against Rove, R-O-V-E, it will include, at the very least, a charge that he made false statements to the Justice Department and FBI investigators when he was first interviewed about his role in the case in October 2003. Individuals close to the probe say Fitzgerald is still investigating other unnamed White House officials. This part of the investigation, like that of Rove, is focusing on whether these officials committed perjury, obstruction of justice, or lied to federal investigators during the early days of the investigation, as opposed to violating an obscure law which makes it a crime to knowingly leak the name of an undercover CIA operative, they say. Got to depart from the text there. An obscure law? Heck, President George H.W. Bush trumpeted that law. He was hopping mad about it because he used to be the head of the CIA. And a certain ex-CIA agent named A.G. had exposed other CIA agents because they were doing extremely nasty things, which is what they do, supporting dictatorships. I don't think that law is so obscure. I don't think it's difficult. I think it's pretty plain. You expose an FBI, you expose a CIA agent, you go to jail. But, you know, not if you're Rove, right? And then you have to be nailed on lying about it. Strange. Strange. The ways of power are very strange. Time is 9:58. And I guess I'll just have to cut my Christmas present short here. But, you know, things are looking better. And in case you hadn't heard, the Patriot Act has been under fire, and that 6 months extension is a heck of a lot better than making it permanent, although who needs 6 months more of fascism? In other words, women's books and resources, your local... Oops, let me start again. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members, yay! And a grant from, in other words, Women's Books and Resources, your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center offering community space, events, gifts, tools for the revolution, a comprehensive collection of women's writings, and more, located at 3734 Southeast Hawthorne and on the web at www.inotherwords.org.